Hey there, this is Seth Juarez from Channel 9, coming to you from the beautiful city of Sandusky, Ohio. It's rather bright today and a little chilly.
You've been outside?
Yes, I've been outside.
Really?
I'm here with a number of people to talk about a number of things at CodeMASH 2017. That was kind of vague, right?
Yeah.
Why doesn't everyone introduce themselves? And then I'll tell you the topic. And at first, you're going to be like, oh, geez. But then you're going to be like, oh, geez, I think, right?
Sure. So I'm Matt Johnson. I work at Microsoft, and you'll find me online doing open source.
Nice.
I'm John Skeet. I work for Google. And you'll find me online doing Stack Overflow, obviously, and also NodeTime, which we will come on to.
Fantastic. And you have a mic on.
I have a mic on. I am Maggie Pint, and I also work at Microsoft, and you will find me doing lots and lots of open source in the JavaScript space.
Fantastic. So we are talking about date time. And for me as a .NET developer, and maybe as a JavaScript developer, because you're going to be talking about JavaScript, I usually just use what comes with the libraries. And I'm okay with that. It's okay to do that. What do you say about that, Matt?
I think it's okay to do that, but you have to be really careful with what you're doing.
Not in JavaScript.
Not in JavaScript.
She's like...
No. The JavaScript date object is a little bit borked, and hopefully it'll get better.
Like, but you use the word borked, yeah. Which means don't do it, okay?
Exactly.
Yeah, don't do it.
So let's, before we get into sort of some implementations, which you're going to talk about, why should I be concerned more than I usually am, which is about this much?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, dates permeate everything.
Of course.
Every business system I've ever worked on uses dates. And, you know, we're not just writing software that runs on our own computers. We're writing websites and business applications that go all over the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're not all on the same date. Simultaneously, you know, the world is a big place.
Looks like I have something to say.
So that's the long answer. The short answer is your code is wrong and you should feel bad.
From
just
Ski,
almost certainly.
He already knows, right? Like, he knows because you've already asked him questions about, and he's told you, don't do this.
And, yeah, so, and this is without seeing your code, it's wrong. Okay, it's almost certainly wrong.
So, like, I want to know, like, what have I done? And you know that I've done this because you are omniscient, obviously, when it comes to datetime.
Have you used datetime.now?
Yes.
It is wrong.
Okay.
Have you used datetime.today?
Yes.
It is wrong.
Yes. I want to know why, though. What is it that about that that's wrong?
Well, when you use datetime.now or datetime.today, you're asking for the local time on the computer. But which computer? It's the computer where the code is running, right? So if you put this in an ASP.NET web application, you're talking about your server. Who cares where your server is? Your
right.
server could be in Duluth, or it could be in Europe, or it could be in UTC. It could just be in UTC. And actually, the best practice is to set your time in UTC
okay.
so you don't accidentally rely on the local time.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you should just never rely on the local time. You should never say datetime now. You should always say datetime UTC now.
Okay. I've done that.
I wonder whether actually the best practice should become setting it into a new time zone that is like 12 hours and 23 minutes away from UTC. So that, you know, I'm from the UK, so half of our year we're in GMT, which is sort of equivalent to UTC.
Uh-huh.
So if I put datetime.now half the time on my local dev machine, I will be right. If I'm in some time zone that's 12 hours and 23 minutes, or actually 12 is a bad idea. Say 9
Nepal?
Hours and 23. Yeah,
Nepal
would be
plus
good.
Plus 545?
545.
Yeah. You could put
so
it in Nepal.
I reckon I would notice when I got that wrong.
Interesting.
And this is just the start of how you do things wrong with date time.
Oh, so like right now, you're saying that just the fact that you've used datetime.now literally means that you are wrong somewhere, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there are times if you're trying to write a clock mm-hmm. to display on the local machine, then datetime.now is probably fine.
Okay.
It gives you a date time, and you know, what does a date time mean? Is it a date? Is it a date and time? Is it a date and time in a particular time zone? Is it a date and time in the local system time zone? Who can tell? It's all of these things. Single responsibility principle? Nah.
That's crazy, right? Because you might be generating a date time on the server that's showing up on a website that's somewhere else, and they're like, wait a minute, it's tomorrow.
Right. And it's useful to have all these ideas separated out, in my view.
Okay.
So you're like, I like the fact that C# has integer types, and it has decimal floating point types, and binary floating point sure. types. All of these things have different things. So I like to be able to say, I want an integer now. Maggie may have somewhat different opinions on this.
Java, so first of all, yesterday I was talking to John about language design, and he looks at me and he says, but you think all numbers are floating point, Maggie. What the heck is wrong with you? But I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And I think that John's going to advocate some strong typing to make sure that you're doing the right and correct thing with your time. And I'm going to say, maybe you just need to know the domain.
Well, I agree and disagree with that to a certain degree. I think you need to use a typing system that reflects your language properly. But the one thing I will say is that no matter whether using strong typing or weak typing, date and time are not like subparts of the same thing. They are separate things
Absolutely.
That are sometimes put together. And I think a lot of people like to look at, the time is just the decimal part of the date. And it doesn't necessarily work that way.
No.
If I'm talking about my birthday, I'm talking about the entire day. I'm not talking about midnight. And if I try to convert that to UTC, I'm going to be off by a day if I'm in some parts of the world. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to send me a happy birthday message a day early because they accidentally store my birthday in UTC.
And heaven forbid, you'll spill your coffee on yourself.
Exactly.
Fun little story. I got into calendar stuff when I was writing something implementing the ActiveSync protocol for Google Mobile Sync.
Yes.
And one of the bizarre things in the Exchange Calendar Sync, Exchange ActiveSync protocol is the birthday is represented as a date time. And it decides to represent it as the local date time on the device that you use, but with no indication of what time zone that is in. So if you try to work out what your actual, and it gets transmitted, if I remember rightly, in UTC. So it's converted it from some unknown time zone into UTC. And so you get this value and say, okay, it's likely to be this date. I think we ended up implementing it as we'll do midday instead of midnight, so that kind of most of the time it'll be right. But it's a bizarre bit of ambiguity.
Conceptually, that has to do with lossiness in programming. Whenever you store something just in UTC, you've lost the local context. You no longer know what that meant to the person who entered the date. And that's a fundamental problem that people commonly encounter in date time is lossiness and forgetting that you actually need information about what time it was when the date was entered. Especially if you're doing like line of business reporting and you want to know like what actions happened on a certain business day. If you don't capture the local time, then you're out of luck, because once you have users in the UK, like John, and in the US, like me and Matt, you're not really going to know, based on UTC, what business day something occurred in.
Right.
And instead of just loss of information about the value itself, when you have to use date time or date, or Java's awful Java util date and Java util calendar.
Don't use those.
You lose information about what the information is meant to mean. So it's not that you're losing, if you have a particular instant in time, that would be represented as a Java util date, but you may be using Java util date having converted it into UTC, and so you've lost information that I was in a time zone, but you've lost the information that, hey, I was originally a local time in a time zone versus just a timestamp that's sort of global.
So does that mean this brings up a concept that usually people don't think about. And I wrote an application that was a global tracking application, and I remember having to think about these things, and it was very hard. Like there was it was for a school. There was areas that had two schools, but that it controlled two schools in two different time zones. And if they were gonna schedule a class,
There were
some issues, right? And I had to capture this notion of this is UTC, and I also had to store, and that's the local time zone.
Right.
So are you saying that the date time object should also have a notion of a time zone original and a time zone target UTC?
Not necessarily. I'm saying that having one type for all of these things in the C# world, where we like having different types to represent different things.
Uh-huh.
In that world, having one type is just a mistake. And now we have date time and date time offset. It's slightly better, but it's still kind of broken. And you were saying it was hard.
Huh.
It's partly hard because the tools that come with the framework are not good enough. And it's partly hard because you were trying to get something else done. You weren't setting some time aside to say, do you know what, I will learn about time zones and learn how to do stuff, and then it will be okay. And I think the main thing I want to get out of this video is learn about time zones. Learn about date time. It's really not that bad. Everyone's afraid of these things, and for kind of good reason, in that if you don't know what you're doing, there are pitfalls everywhere. But it doesn't take that much effort. If you spend 2-3 hours saying, just, I will learn about time zones and maybe calendar systems once and for all, mm-hmm. then you will still need to think. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we'll talk a little bit about Node Time in a moment. And one of my philosophies is, there are things you need to think about. I'm not going to try to remove that thinking. I will make it mechanically explicit, easy to do. You know, once you've thought, I want to do this, I will make it really easy to explain that, to express that to Node Time. But you still need to do the thinking. And any time that something tries to take away that thinking, I'm kind of worried that we'll be doing the wrong thing.
So let me tell you what I did. And since you folks are experts on daytime, and you poke holes in what I did, because this was maybe a naive implementation. Maybe it was a good one. Maybe I did something wrong. What we did is, anytime something happened, we stored it, and it was a central server, we stored the UTC time. And we also stored, for wherever that area was, we stored their time zone.
How did you store their time zone?
I stored it in whatever, like, there was a time zone info object or something like that. I stored, like, the string of it or something like that.
The ID.
The ID.
Then I stored you did the right thing.
So every area, every time something would happen, it would always happen in UTC, but we would display it, depending on the person that was logged in their time zone offset.
Was this always in the past or sometimes in the future?
Sometimes in the future.
Right. So if you can, suppose you are in somewhere that changes its rules regularly, and you have something planned a year in advance,
yes.
and you say, I want it to be 10 o'clock in this town. Okay?
So we would store UTC and then their time zone.
Right. So, and then the rules change so that UTC timestamp in that time zone won't be 10 o'clock anymore.
Right. Yeah, that's.
So what information did you start with? You started with, I want 10 o'clock local time in that time zone. That's what you should store. Store what you've got, then you can't be losing information. And you may want to do something, a scheduled job that converts everything into UTC so that you can do queries against it easily to say, you know, well, does this actually happen before that? Okay, it's, you know, this is 10:30, that's 11 o'clock, but actually the 11 o'clock happens earlier because of time zones. Yeah, some normalization as a separate field with the UTC is fine. And then you can just recompute that when the rules change, because the rules do change.
John's not crazy here. The IANA time zone database, which is the main time zone database, released 10 times in 2016. And those are batched releases. Mm-hmm. So every one of those releases had more than one change to a time zone somewhere. For most of the year, the clocks were off in Russia. Egypt decided not to do DST 3 days ahead of time. So, in the United States, we've been pretty much steady since 2007, which actually is pretty recently.
2007, is it like the notion, like, of time is pretty old?
Just think about,
for it to change that often is ridiculous.
Just think about this, like, if you're handling a date previous to 2007 and you wrote your own DST handling code, which is horrible, anything pre-2007 is wrong.
So what you're saying is that the part that I missed is that there is maintenance that has to be done on time.
Absolutely.
That's what
I
missed.
I want to be really clear. When we say the rules change, we're not saying a change from standard time to DST. You know, that happens twice a year in most time zones, or many time zones. We're saying the actual rules that say whether or not that will happen and when that will happen to allow you to predict it, those rules change. It's like saying, okay, well, this year, A, E, I, O, U are vowels, but next year, E might be a consonant. You know, that kind of rule change is weird. And just to pick up when Maggie was saying, if you're writing your own code to predict the DST changes, and you shouldn't, she's absolutely right. You do not want to write any date time code. People would have to be really dumb to want to write date time code. Yeah?
We're the three stupidest people on earth.
Yeah.
No, there's like certain things that you just don't want to write, and you hope that someone else will write it, and you've got to trust them. So the thing that I'm finding fascinating is not necessarily, because, like, if let's just say the IANA time zone stuff never changed, then it would be easy. Like, there would be some thinking, and you would have to be deliberate about it. But now this notion of changing the target of what time even means, that to me specified, like, especially because I was writing, like, schedules for classes a year into the future, in different time zones, and the times were changing. And so, like, to me, that means like, okay, you know, every time there's an IANA change, I need to go and do some updates.
So you probably had heard that advice, always store UTC.
Yes.
I will just tell people that is wrong. Not always.
Okay. Okay. This is good info.
Always, if you're timestamping, if you're logging a timestamp in the present or you're talking about time in the past, then yes, but not in the future. And not if you're talking about whole dates. If you're talking about birthdays or your anniversary date or your hire date, don't do it then either. Whole dates should never be converted, and future should never be converted. Always retain the information you have. And if you're trying to do that conversion, you say, I don't need that other information anymore. Well, you're wrong. The other thing I'll just add is people usually ask, well, how do I know if this stuff changes and why are they changing it so much? So like she said, Egypt, the government of Egypt changed their mind 3 days before the thing was supposed to go into effect. So it's not computer people that are making these changes, it's the governments of the world. And we're just recording this information and trying to make sure everybody has it. So the best way is just to go to IANA, there's a time zone page on IANA, and subscribe to the announcements mailing list. And then anytime there's an update, you'll know about it.
So what you're saying, and now this is starting to make sense, you're saying, Seth, you need to think of time not just as a number or a date, you need to think of time relative, what does it mean, like, I'm right here. Tell me the time that something's going to happen right here. Store that.
Yes.
Store that.
Right here.
Right here. And store that time and right here. And you're saying that that is enough information to be able to extrapolate back to whatever UTC might be in the future.
It might be enough information. It might not be.
Oh, jeez. Well, so, I thought we got somewhere, people.
And to be clear, I almost want to stop trying to educate now because we're not going to be able to cover everything here. What I want to get across is you should learn about this stuff. Learn about it explicitly and deliberately. Carve out time that says, what I'm doing this morning is learning about time. But the why it might not be right is sometimes happen twice. Usually it's sort of between 1 and 2 in the morning or 2 and 3 in the morning. But we know, you know, spring forward, fall back.
Yeah.
Well, what happens in the fall back? In the UK, I can't remember what the US version is. In the UK, in sometime in October or whenever it is, the clock will go 1:58, 1:59, 1 o'clock.
Oh my gosh, that is correct.
So if you've recorded, I want 1:30 in the UK on this time.
That's
well,
twice.
That happens twice. Or maybe it doesn't happen at all if it's in
forward.
March.
Oh my goodness.
So, you know, if you want to be really, really strict about this sort of thing, you need to think, well, what happens? What is my school going to do with its 1:30 in the morning lesson if suddenly that time doesn't exist? Or if it happens twice? Maybe I want to do the first of those. Maybe I want to do the second of those. If it's invalid, maybe I'll do what it would have been if there weren't a transition. All these things.
Here.
Interesting.
We can even demo
let's look
it.
At some code, yeah
we can even demo it a little bit in code. So what John was just talking about was, sorry, I had to remember the date here, so we've got a little junk code. I'll clear the console. But here, you can see, I'm one of the maintainers of Moment.js, and you can see here.
So this is a JavaScript library.
This is a JavaScript library for date and time. And you can see here, John was just talking about DST transitions and unpredictable things happening. In the United States, this was the date of our spring forward transition in 2016. And you're going to see here that when I put in 2 a.m., I'm going to get 3 a.m. back out because that's when the clocks jump forward. So you have to remember that sometimes you're going to parse a time that doesn't exist. If you want to get really crazy, we could be in, what is it, America, Sao Paulo on October 10th?
Yep.
Sounds right?
Sounds right.
Could get really crazy. And we could parse, 2016. Is it October 10th? Come on, guys.
There's so many of them.
You two are too geeky for me.
It's like you guys are like, know the exact times where time didn't work correctly.
Well, we get a lot of these edge cases, you know.
Okay. I think I'm...
It's not the 10th.
It's the 9th.
Is it 9th? Oh, we're going to struggle here. Basically, in Brazil, they do their DST transition... I need a zero. Basically, in Brazil, they do their DST transition at midnight. So you're going to get a situation where midnight doesn't exist.
Well, or does, depending on... What does midnight mean to you? You probably woke up this morning thinking, I know what midnight means.
Yeah.
Is midnight... 0000, or is it when one day becomes another day? And what we're saying is in Brazil, one day a year, midnight occurs at 1 a.m.
if you want to think of it that way, John.
And this is actually one of the things that first got me into calendar stuff. I was doing calendar sync, and I got a bunch of exceptions from Joe the Time.
This year it'll be the 15th.
There we go.
So you see us parsing midnight and getting 1 a.m. instead. What'll really get people is I could maybe parse 10 a.m. on that day, and then I could ask for start of day.
You've got star of at the moment.
Oops, star of. I could ask for start of day, and I'm going to get 1 a.m. and people get totally shocked, and they're like, why doesn't your library work?
But it gets it right.
But it does get it right.
It does get it right, which is great. I don't know, what does it do for the missing day in
Samoa?
In Samoa.
Yeah. So you may think it's bad enough that some midnights don't
exist.
I don't actually think Moment handles that.
Some whole days don't exist.
How does that happen?
Because Samoa went from, what was it, minus 12 to plus 12?
Minus 12 to plus 14.
26 hour. Wow. Okay, so they went on something like December 30th, 2010.
It was on December 29th in 2010, and they went directly to December 31st. They skipped over December 30th by moving by 24 hours from a negative offset to a plus offset. On one side of the international date time to the other.
Is anything right in any database when it comes to time?
Who knows? But I mean, that sort of edge case, that's really, really edge casey. Okay. I think if that's all that's wrong in your code, that it won't handle Samoa for that day, you're doing pretty well.
Like, I'm thinking about the ugliness of the code that you've had to write for this. Like, this has got to be some gnarly code. Like, if, you know, this day and Samoa, is that how you write it?
In Noda Time, we do handle this. We say, if you try to take a local date or a local date time and say, give me that local date time in Samoa, we will say, no, that date doesn't exist. In fact, it's the start of date. Yeah, you take the date and you say, give me the start of that day in Samoa. And it will say, sorry, there's no such thing.
Is there like some weird if statement somewhere?
Well, I say, well, let's see whether it's midnight. Oh, midnight doesn't exist. Okay, let's see whether the other side of a DST change or a time zone change exists and is on the right date. No, I've got the end of that DST transition and it's still the wrong date, so nope, doesn't exist.
So let's
One
do this.
One thing I'll ahead, point sorry. Out about what's going on here that's kind of critical is a lot of developers don't make a good distinction between calendar math and timeline math. And that's where you'll get into trouble here, because a lot of times we'll say, well, we want to do calendar math, so math about dates. I want to add a month, and I want to know what a month from now is, and I don't really care about time, so I'm just going to set all my times to zero. The minute that you're operating in a Sao Paulo time zone, if all your times are set to zero, now what you're going to have is all your downstream calculations off by an hour, when what you really meant was, I don't need time at all, because you're going to get kicked over to 1 a.m.,
And this is why it's really important to distinguish between a date and a date time. Yep. I find it really sad that the .NET framework doesn't have a date-only type built in. Mm-hmm. I actually added one. It's up for proposal on CoreFX Lab. But you can get it today if you use John's library, NotaTime, in the .NET framework. And Moment handles some of these conditions internally. So using a library is probably the better thing to do in these cases. But putting everything in a date time, you get these zeros all over the place serialized, and they don't mean anything. And the person if you send it in JSON and you just meant the date, but you send them a date at midnight and they say, okay, well, I've got a date at midnight and now you've got a different meaning. And then you apply a different kind of math to it and now you get an extra hour.
So let's do this. Let's talk about, because I feel like we sufficiently terrified people and I'm running a little bit low on disk space here and I want to make sure we get this in. Let's talk about the two libraries you build. Let's bring up NotaTime first.
And this will just demonstrate what Maggie was saying about the difference between calendrical arithmetic, I tend to call it, and timeline arithmetic.
All right, let's go to the webpage.
Okay, so this is an example in NotaTime. NotaTime already is released. I think it's at 1.3.2 at the moment. I'm hoping to release NotaTime 2 sometime this quarter. And I'm just showing it in C# pad because it's the easiest way of showing it on Maggie's Mac.
Sure.
So that's a nice way to dabble is you go to csharppad.com and just using NotaTime and it's there. So we can see I'm using var just for brevity, but we can see we've got a date time zone from the TCDB provider. You can Depending on what platform you're on, you can also use the Windows time zones. They're slightly different. So we're looking at the New York time zone. And then I've got a local date time, which is a date and time that doesn't have any time zone associated with it. And it knows it hasn't got a time zone associated with it. And I want to say, well, what is that local time in New York? And this is February, and it's fine. There's exactly one occurrence of that local date time in the New York time zone. So I can use in zone strictly. So strictly says, if it's ambiguous because it happens twice, or it's been skipped so it happens zero times, then go bang.
Right.
So the start is fine. And we can add, we can use like timeline arithmetic to say what happened 28 times 24 hours later. So, you know, if you start a stopwatch and wait until it said, well, I've clicked over a day 28 times.
Not a day.
Well, yeah, 24 hours. When it's done 24 times 28 hours, then capture that endpoint, and that will be a zoned end. Mm-hmm. And this is still a zoned date time, so this is a date and time in a particular time zone. It knows the offset in case it's ambiguous. Mm-hmm. Great, we can do that. But you know, usually you wouldn't want to put from standard days 28. You would want to do calendrical arithmetic. And we've decided that you can't do that on a zoned date time because it becomes ambiguous too quickly. It becomes too problematic.
I see.
So you have to explicitly go, you know, what was the local date time associated with this zoned start? We could have just used local start, but you know,
yeah.
Imagining we'd actually started with zoned start. And then we can do calendrical arithmetic on that, and we will end up with, fairly obviously, 2017, March the 12th, 2:30 a.m. And that's fine as a local date time, but when we try to put it back into the New York time zone, if we say do that strictly, well, 2:30 didn't exist, so boom, it goes bang. We can say in zone leniently instead, I'm making you decide. If I just had in zone that took just the zone, I would be trying to think for you. And I can't make the decision for you about whether you want to go boom, whether you want to resolve it to something else.
Right.
You know, in this case, because it's skipped, there is nothing I can give you. There is no zone date time for the New York time zone that will have a local date time of 2:30 in the morning on that date. I can't do that. So I have in zone leniently, which will do something, and it's documented what it does. It's changing to something better for 2.0, thanks to Matt.
Okay.
But it will do something. And if we run this, we'll see what actually happens. So the first value we see will be when we just added 24 hours times 28.
Uh-huh.
So we end up with 3:30, which makes sense. So we were sort of the 2:30 plus the hour that we skipped. That makes sense. But we've got 3 o'clock in the morning if we use in zone leniently. It's finding the first later zone date time.
I see.
Anyway, is that what you want? Maybe, maybe not. The other thing you can do is just call in zone and pass the zone and a resolver to say, well, this is how I want to handle a skip time. This is what I want to do to handle an ambiguous time.
Got it.
So I want you to feel the philosophy of this is everything is very deliberate. You'll end up with code that may end up being slightly verbose, but it should be clear at any one time what you're trying to do. And now Maggie can show us what the same kind of operation looks like in Moment.
So just before you get there, so if you're a .NET developer and you are looking at time in the future that you're storing and that you're working with.
Anything, because, and it's not just, we've concentrated on date time zones here, but it's hopefully, Noda Time should make any date and time handling code clearer and more testable. So instead of using datetime.utc now, if you do that, how are you going to test it? Are you going to manually set your system clock to different things?
Nice.
I want to see what happens on a leap year. No. So we have an iClock interface that represents a service for getting the current
And I literally
time.
Remember setting my actual computer clock to do
right.
the tests.
Yeah.
So I'm remembering this now, this painful memory that you've resurfaced.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, and John. Okay.
It shows,
you.
I did say your code was wrong. I just
yeah,
didn't
it
know
was.
Where.
Yeah.
So it's basically encouraging you to use dependency injection. And obviously, we have a system clock, which is what you would normally inject. And we have a fake clock that you can use for testing whatever you like. And you can set it to a particular time, and it's all good.
So let's move to client-side stuff, which is probably even worse, because now you're looking at a server time and a client time at the same time, which is all kinds of messed up.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I don't consider JavaScript to be client-side code.
Right, which is true, because it can be server-side,
honestly,
too.
Honestly, Moment has huge numbers of Node users.
I love it.
But, We are fast and loose heathens in the JavaScript community.
Own it.
You know, like John twitches when he has encounters with us. So Moment, probably the most popular datetime library in JavaScript. Very different API here than NotaTime.
Right.
The first thing I'll tell you about Moment is that it only really has one type for dates and times. It also has a duration type, which I won't get into. It only has one type for dates and times, and it's basically the equivalent of John here's zone date time.
Okay.
Whenever you're dealing with a moment object, it's always in a time zone. By default, if you just create a moment, like this, it's in your local time zone based on the machine. Okay.
On the wherever it's running, on the server or the client.
Yeah. So right now, even though I'm in Sandusky, Ohio, I haven't changed the clock on my machine, so I'm getting -8. It thinks I'm in Seattle where I live.
Okay.
You can ask it to be in the UTC, if you type it right, time zone. And now we're operating in UTC, and any operations on that moment object I'm constructing are going to reflect a UTC time. You can also use moment time zone. Let's see here. I'm going to keep page into a... Here we go. You can also use moment time zone. What I'm doing here is I'm saying construct a moment object in the America, New York time zone.
Right.
And what I'll do here is I'll start with... I'll do John's example of add 28... times 24 hours. And this is the exact same date John was using, so that February 12th, and I add 28 times 24 hours, and I get March 12th at 3:30.
So you're doing the right thing, the same thing.
I'm doing the same thing. It is doing the right thing. It's being a lot less explicit about this, though.
Right.
It is not showing you... it's not showing you that it's going to move around your ambiguous time.
I see.
It's not giving you warnings about that. It's trying to make the best assumption that it possibly can.
Got it.
And, you know, John's library has a point. You know, I'll be the first one to say, John's library has a point, because people get themselves into trouble when a library makes assumptions. So even though this library will let you play fast and loose, and it's just going to be chaining and quick and in the most concise syntax you could possibly have.
Right.
If you're unaware of your domain, if you're unaware that these kinds of things can happen, then you're going to get into trouble anyways.
Right. And if you know the things to think about, then you can deal with, and you know the library you're working with, so you need to understand the domain, and then whenever you move to a new library, new programming language, whatever it is, learn what the, not necessarily peculiarities are, but what the opinions are of the library you're using, so you can then usually do whatever you want, and it may be easier, it may be harder. And you know, Moment is clearly going to be leaps and bounds ahead of, if you have to do this in Java, in the JavaScript date, it's going to be world of pain. Okay. But yeah, if you know the problems to think about, then
it helps.
Yeah.
Okay, Maggie, you had something else you want to show us just to wrap up, and then we'll get some call to actions. Now that people are sufficiently terrified, I hope. So where can people go while she's getting that finished up to look up NotaTime? And
so NotaTime.org has a user guide and an API reference doc. And of course, it's all on GitHub. It's all open source. There are NuGet packages. So you know, that's our normal way of distributing is just add it to NuGet. It's available in PCLs and NetStandard and things.
And now, as she's finishing, I always wondered this. Like, why, what note, why, where is the word Nota?
Okay, so in Java, they started off with Java util date, and then Java 1.1 had Java util calendar, and it was truly dreadful. And the Joda Time project was started, I think Stephen Colbon started it, didn't he? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
So, very smart guy, Stephen Colbon. Not Stephen Colbert, very, very different,
different
people.
Different guy.
Yeah.
Different guy.
Much as it would be awesome to see Stephen Colbert trying to do date-time arithmetic. Anyway, Stephen Colbon created Joda Time, and for many years this was the thing to use, and it was widely known as the thing to use. And now there's Java 8's java.time.stuff, which Stephen Colbon is also sort of the leading, the driving force behind. Yeah. So it corrected some of Joda Time's issues, some things where it would default to using, just as Moment was doing, you know, I'll have a new moment. Well, that must mean the system clocks now. It's sort of the equivalent of datetime.now. So Joda Time did the same thing in Java 8. You have to be more explicit about it. So we wanted a .NET version of Joda Time, so Nota Time. And also, you know, I did a search and it didn't get any hits. So that was clearly a good name.
Notatime.org. And Maggie, you had someone else to show us to finish up. Yes.
So just, you know, because I mentioned and Matt mentioned at the beginning, do not use JavaScript date. I came out with a there are a lot of problems with JavaScript date, but I came out with a canonical example of why this thing cannot be dealt with.
Right.
So if you look at what I have on the screen here, I am parsing the ISO 8601 format of January 1st, 2017. And I'm getting December 31st, 2016, because that is interpreted as UTC when passed in ISO format.
Oh, no.
But here I'm passing in 1/1/2017, and I'm getting January 1st, 2017, because this is being interpreted as local time when passed in that US standard format. But the worst part going on here is that the new specification, ECMAScript 2015, actually defines different behavior for if you're passing a date-only ISO format or if you're passing a ISO format with both a date and time. Basically, this date parser is a never-ending disaster. Also, if you were to run this code here in the UK, you're going to get an entirely different result. And if you were to pass in any other string, it's going to be random. It's practically random what you get out of the date parser. You hope you're right.
Oh my goodness.
Can I just try something?
You can try
say,
whatever you want, John.
So the preferred ISO format is actually that. And it doesn't even parse it. ISO 8601 says, well, you can use a period or you can use a comma as your decimal separator. But we'll prefer comma for whatever reason. And no one ever uses it.
I will mention, I am headed to TC39 in a couple weeks to get this dealt with.
So this is so. Now that everyone's sufficiently terrified, and you're doing some JavaScript development,
yep.
Make sure you look at Moment. If you're doing some .NET yep. development, and you have some time involved, look at a note of time.
And the last thing I'll just say is, John and I both fight over the date, time, and time zone tags on Stack Overflow. sometimes he's on top, sometimes I'm on top. So like, if you have questions about this, search first, but then feel free to ask questions, and one of us or somebody else will probably get back to you.
Pluralsight.
Oh, yeah, I have a course on Pluralsight Date and Time Fundamentals, so
awesome.
You can look that up.
Make sure you check that out. Thanks so much. I think we just scratched the surface of how terrifying this topic is and how everything's going to explode on one of these days where that day doesn't exist.
It's terrifying until you understand it, but it's really not impossible to understand. It's entirely doable.
I love how optimistic you are. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for spending some time with us again. We're here in Sandusky, Ohio, learning all about date time and how my code was always wrong. And yours might be too. Let's get it fixed. Thanks for watching. This is Seth Juarez, Channel 9. See you next time.